Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Razor Sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the killer bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Patch Creighton in for Jeremy Branham alongside Joel Blank, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN on the HRNP listener line, on the text line as well. At P. Creighton 1, at Pac-Man Joel on the tweeton. Tyler Scott on the other side of the glass, at Tyler Drew Scott. And, of course, on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Joel, you know, a couple of things we want to get into here. One, let's talk about here this with, do the Texans need to move everybody they can? Now, obviously, with the Watson situation, we've gone over that ad nauseum. We know what's at stake there. You know, they've taken a major gamble by not moving him this year at the deadline, hoping that they can get all this legal stuff figured out, not knowing what the punishment will be from the league. Laremy Tunsil, who is still considered to be a top-end left tackle and has 2 years left on his deal, about $36 million. Brandon Cooks has 1 year and $12.5 million left on his deal. And I am not just trade him for soup because you'll get out from under the contract, because these are guys with value. Left tackles are hard to come by, and damn near every playoff team would love to have Laremy Tunsil as their left tackle. Brandon Cooks has shown you he is a quarterback-proof wide receiver. It doesn't matter who's throwing him the ball. He's able to be productive. He's able to impact games. He still gets open down the field. He still makes guys miss. He still knows how to get separation. These are guys that I feel like you can get good value for. I think Tunsil still gets you at least one first. And then maybe, I think Tunsil, for a premium left tackle.
Is he still premium?
I think he is. I think Larry Tunsil gets you at least a first, probably a first and like a third, maybe a first and a fourth. I think Brandon Cooks gets you at least a second-round pick. Maybe it's a late second, but it's still a second-round pick. To me, for a team that, again, needs talent at every position, Brandon Cooks isn't the difference between you winning three games and nine games. He's not on this team.
But he could be a difference maker for another team. I agree with that. And the other thing is, we keep hearing culture. Well, one minute he's your culture guy. The next minute he's on Twitter bashing the organization for trading away Mark Ingram and calling it BS, but then having to walk it back a couple days later. But then them saying, well, we're not trading him because he's a culture guy. Well, the more they focus on culture, when they start developing a roster of guys where culture truly means something, because they're trying to actually get a roster together of talent as opposed to this season and maybe next. But when they get their first full draft and culture means more with young players that are easily swayed by the way veterans act in the locker room, I would think that there's a few homes out there for a Brandon Cooks. He's proven in every situation he's been in that he's been productive. As you said, he's been productive in a franchise with no quarterbacks that say that he should be as productive or close to as productive as he's been in his career. We know that big-time receivers got first-round picks, unless you're the Texans. But at the same time, at this point and stage in his career with the salary that he's making, take a second. Take a third. But you know what? That's another asset in your back pocket to start the rebuild going full force, because he's not going to do anything for you in the short term that's more valuable than whatever he can get you from the draft and the assets you acquire. Same thing with Tunsil. Stop worrying about what you gave up to get him and worry about him still having enough value that you can get something for him before it's too late.
Do you think Aaron Rodgers would have liked to have given up a second-round pick to get Brandon Cooks?
Well, first of all, that was the other thing I was going to say. If you can find some taker, whether it was because of the hostage situation in Green Bay with Rodgers versus management or not for Randall Cobb, absolutely Brandon Cooks could find a home in Green Bay. There's plenty. Baltimore could have used with all of the talent that they were looking for at wide receiver and the injuries that they had to endure. Baltimore would have loved another receiver. There are plenty of teams that would have loved. He doesn't have to be the wide receiver one. But if he enhances the core that you have on your roster and you're a playoff team, he makes you better.
And do you think that, and considering he's already been there, so, you know, they're familiar with him, you think the Patriots would be interested in Brandon Cooks to give Mac Jones a target?
I don't think that they would be disinterested. Obviously, with Belichick, he never wants to overpay. But I really believe that there would have been an opportunity for him to go back there because I don't think he burned a bridge. And obviously he and Jack were tight enough that Jack wanted him when he got here. So that means that there has to be some, and Caserio was on board with it. So evidently he didn't burn any bridges in New England. And look, with the way New England's been fluttering right there and just fluctuating between winning the division and then losing to Buffalo yesterday and falling a step back, you don't think that they would love to have Brandon Cooks and know in the future that they've got a guy they can rely on short term as they develop Mac? Absolutely, there's a home for him.
Another example, Philadelphia Eagles, who before the season weren't even sure if they wanted Jalen Hurts as their quarterback. Well, the Eagles are 8-7. They're plus 80 in point differential. Do you think if they had another receiver opposite Devontae Smith that maybe they win another game or two? Because Jalen Rager's been a disaster. So how you got Smith and you got Brandon Cooks to go along there with Jalen Hurts. He'd be a real nice fit there, too. New Orleans, without Michael Thomas, they have nobody catching footballs. And whatever they do next year at the quarterback position, that's another team that if Aaron Rodgers is available, I can see New Orleans. We'll figure out the cap. We're going to get him here. Russell Wilson, same thing. They got to be able to throw to somebody. And if you can use a second or a third round pick to get Brandon Cooks, that seems like a move they got to make. You got to have somebody's going to be able to catch football.
Again, you're not in a position to value veteran players at this point and say that they're worth holding on to. That's why they should have traded Justin Reed, no matter how much you thought he was a good guy, until he culturally did something, just talk back to a coach. No one should have been free of the ability to be traded on this roster, and everyone should have been traded. Because the only value that any veteran player in that locker room has right now is trade value. And that's why they all should be moved and sent on their way to the next team where they might be able to flourish and send their tweets and messages and press conferences about, thank God I'm out of there. But at the same time, Nick Caserio and company got an extra asset or two to put in their back pocket, whether it turns into a starter or a special teams player or a second stringer, whatever. It's fortifying the roster of the future, which you have to do because that's what you're focused on, because your time isn't now. It's coming.
Wasn't that supposed to be the whole purpose of all these one-year contracts, right? So that all the guys who perform well, you could sell off at the deadline, get a 5, get a 6. Maybe if they play really well, get a 4. But you could stockpile some draft picks. Then maybe you can package some of those picks up and move forward sure. To get a player that you wanted. And for whatever reason, And I don't know that any of these are real reasons, so whatever reason, they couldn't do this, right? They traded Mark Ingram, and they traded Charles Omenihu, and that was, well, that was about it. It never clicked to me why they didn't try to sell off everybody they could, because, look, Nick Caceres made it very plain and simple. This was a major undertaking. It was clearly never about this year. Well, what the hell's the difference how many games you win? It's about how many picks you get. But they haven't operated that way. And that seems to be counterproductive to everything that you would think that they're doing. We talk about moving Deshaun Watson or Laramie Tunsil or Brandon Cooks and getting more picks. And Joel, you had mentioned the idea of, well, you know what? Maybe people are a little bit nervous. Maybe they're a little skeptical of, well, Nick Caserio, who's been involved in the draft process mm-hmm. for a long time, but was never the guy who had final say. Now he's the guy who has final say. And look, his first draft, he came to the team just a couple of months before the draft. They didn't have a first. They didn't have a second. So they had to kind of put it together very quickly. Now he's going to have a draft with a full complement of draft picks. How much do you trust Nick Caserio to make those picks? Well, maybe we should give him a little bit more credit than we would have, maybe even just a couple of weeks ago. Let's get into that on the other side. Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Branham. He's Joel Blank. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Joel, so I want to pick your brain on this, right? Because people have consternation about Nick Caserio as general manager. Well, what's the difference if we go and get all these draft picks? If we don't have a guy who can make those picks? And I don't necessarily know that that is fair to Nick Caserio, because while maybe the trade market has not borne a lot of fruit for him, in this season, if we go back and look at his draft class, for which he did not have a lot of time to prepare for the Texans, Davis Mills has shown you he is at least a competent quarterback. He has made strides throughout the season. He has gotten better as the season went on. He played his best game with his best offensive line talent not playing, with his best wide receiver not playing. Davis Mills, to me, is arrow up. And they got him in the third round. Maybe everything, okay, well, hey, what could this guy be? Maybe they did see something in him. You know, he's the guy who had a connection to Pep Hamilton earlier, you know, David Shaw and the Stanford staff. So maybe that has helped. Maybe that was just a smart decision. Let's get a guy that knows, let's get a quarterback coach and a quarterback that know each other and help them develop. Later on in the third round, they took Nico Collins out of Michigan. Now he had skipped a year because of COVID, and as the year has gone on, he has looked better. He has looked stronger.
Yeah.
You had mentioned earlier about how sometimes, and this is something young quarterbacks all do this, would stare down receivers, and it would take him a little bit longer to get off that primary receiver to find a secondary receiver. There was a play in the first half of the game on Sunday where Mills kind of got caught staring at the same side of the field. And because of the protection, he was afforded an extra second to come back across the front field, find an open Nico Collins for a first down. But Nico Collins, who earlier in the year, you know, couldn't get off the bench, now finds himself in a primary role as one of the primary receivers on this team, somebody who has gotten better as the season has gone on. Brevin Jordan is a tight end. Now, look, he's not starting. He's a backup tight end, but he's made plays in his limited time, and he was a fifth-round pick. Fifth-round picks, look, hit and miss with the Houston Texans. But he so far has been able to provide some plays and do some things and give them a useful player who comes in off the bench. Well, those were their top three picks. Maybe, and look, we're equating to, look, these are third-round picks. These are fifth-round picks. We're not looking for all pros, but we're looking for solid players. Maybe Nick Caserio nailed all three of those.
Even if it's not nailed, but at least got it right to the standpoint of putting a player on the roster that's going to be here for a couple of years that shows potential, right? That's what the draft is these days in multiple leagues. It's based on potential. The NBA more so than anywhere else, but even in the NFL, you're drafting guys with the potential to become great, good, better than average, and you kind of, with your point system and otherwise, put them into categories in terms of how what's a stretch, what's a reach, where do these players fall into what rounds they should be drafted in, whatever, and then you try and get it right, and you try and get the right guy if there's multiple guys at a certain position group. like there was with Dillard a couple years ago and Howard, and everybody thought, oh my God, the Texans got the wrong guy, and they traded up to do so, and they screwed it all up. Well, Dillard has been a bust, and not that Howard's been great, but Howard has been serviceable. So that's what the draft becomes. But the reason why people have trepidation, the reason why people have worry about Nick Caserio, and I said maybe it was a blessing in disguise he didn't have a first or second round pick this year, because this was his first time, as you mentioned, running the whole draft, making all the calls. And he got a lot of them right, or at least it looks like now they're trending towards getting him right, where early in the season maybe it looked like he didn't. I've been harping all the whole time on a lot of people believe Davis Mills, if he played one more year at Stanford, would have been a number one, a first round pick. And Jeremy and I got into some heated discussions about this because he's like, who cares? That doesn't matter. Blah, 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 blah. Well, now it's starting to matter because now people are seeing that this guy had potential. But that's what I go back to. Drafts are based on potential now instead of slam dunks. You're getting a bona fide player that's going to be a cornerstone of your franchise. So the fact that he didn't have a first or second round pick, he threw away seventh round picks, sixth round picks. He, you know, traded for players that ended up not even making the roster and gave up low round picks to do so. Fine, get it out of your system. Make it a learning curve. Understand where you made a hit and a miss and move on. Because this is the year that it's so vital you don't miss. You don't miss with the trades. You don't trade for guys that either had a bum shoulder and they aggravated that shoulder once you got them, or quarterbacks that never made your roster. This is where you start fortifying the long-term commitment to winning by getting position groups strengthened with young players. You can't miss now. That's why even in our earlier discussions today, the player development side of this is so key in making sure they don't swing and miss no matter where the pick is and how many picks they have yet to make. Every single pick is so much more vitally important than it's ever been for the Houston Texans starting right now.
Well, because of the position they've put themselves in.
Sure.
They've decimated a roster that once upon a time, 2 years ago, had a 24-0 lead in Kansas City in the first half. And from that time, they have absolutely shredded what was once a playoff team's
roster.
But
you say put themselves in? Deshaun put them there, too, when Deshaun decided he wasn't playing here anymore.
Well, Deshaun decided he wasn't playing here anymore because they allowed Bill O'Brien to annihilate the team. They allowed Jack Easterby, who last year apparently was a very divisive influence in the locker room. The owner made representations to the quarterback and then welched on every single one of those representations, which caused the quarterback to say, you know what? You guys are a bunch of clowns. I want out. And then 2 months later, it turned out the quarterback had a lot of other issues that they now have to deal
with
as well.
But previous to the other issues coming to the surface, him saying it's either him or me, and knowing that an owner does not get fired, that put the Texans behind the eight ball in a lot of ways in terms of the fact that instead of thinking about trying to overcome what happened in Kansas City, as you mentioned, and trying to progress to the next level, that we might be closer to a rebuild than we are a Super Bowl.
It did, and a lot of that had to do with basically the year of destruction that they had in between that playoff game and the last game of last season. You know, how do you go from being a division winner and having a shot against Kansas City to 4-12, historically bad defense? Another one of the pet peeves that I have is people go, oh, well, you know, how good is Deshaun Watson? They only wanted him to 4 wins. How many playoff games has Deshaun's led them to the playoffs several times? To just ignore the fact that they had a historically bad defense that made a living of getting rid of whatever late lead Deshaun got them 8 times last season, actually. Deshaun gave them a lead late, and the Texans' defense blew it in the last couple of minutes. The idea that, oh, we're just going to ignore the fact that defense was one of the worst in the history of the league and just throw it on Deshaun. Deshaun put up MVP-type numbers last year.
They won 4 games.
They won 4 games because their defense was historically awful.
Well, it wasn't just the defense, though.
But their defense,
I agree with what you're saying, I think that there's plenty of blame to pass around.
Bad defenses. The Texans were just, when I say historically bad, I'm not even kidding. That's how bad they were. Oh, and they were also the second worst team in the league at running the football. They couldn't protect. They gave up top 5 sacks. They couldn't protect. They couldn't run the football. They couldn't stop Katy High School on defense. And Deshaun still put up those kind of numbers. That's what it took for that team, as much as they tore that team
apart. But there was
apart.
Plenty of blame to be passed around. My only point being in mentioning that was it wasn't all just what they did or didn't do. Some of it was what Deshaun Watson decided to do, which was say, I want out, which would set them on a completely different course and path than they might have been had he never said uttered those words.
I think it's unfair to look at that in a vacuum and not take into a fact, take into account the 14 months prior to that, that showed everything this team gave ZFG about in order to destroy the roster.
I'm not discounting that, but what I'm saying is it's all part of the overall that came together. And so to just say that it was just their missteps and misdoing, and granted, some of what they did led Deshaun to what he decided, but he decided that the owner had to go. I mean, you can get a coach fired. You can get a general manager fired. You can get players moved, as we've seen. But unless you Donald Sterling it as an owner.
Yeah, you're not getting out.
You're not getting out. So the fact that one player with one ability to make one decision or one opinion public changed a lot of things, regardless of anything else that they did from a football standpoint.
That was his way of basically throwing, I am going to take every drop of influence that I have. I want the hell out of here. Now, again, we don't know what into that. Does that? Did he know that this stuff with the legal issues was coming? Did he not know? Was this agent-driven? Is it Deshaun-driven? Is there somebody in his ear? We don't know. There's a lot of those parts that we don't technically know. What we do know is that if the Texans had said, oh, you want us to fire the owner, fine. I'm going to put you on an auction block. You just agree to go whoever gives us the best deal. You know what? Give us five teams. Give us six teams. We'll go get the best deal, and you can be on your way. They didn't want to do that. No, Deshaun, you're going to stay here. No, Deshaun, we don't care that you hate us. You're going to stay here. That hubris that they had in that moment of refusing to entertain calls, refusing to even pick up the phone when they had gotten to this point, do you really want somebody to be here who has told you, I don't want to be here, I never want to see you again, you're all horrible people? Do you really think it's going to work long-term with a guy who feels that way? Of course it's not. They should have moved on then. They didn't. Then the world collapsed,
but you know
when
why
the legal stuff happened.
You also know why they didn't. Because they spent so many years and hours and moments dealing with non-franchise quarterbacks and the musical chairs and the revolving door of expatriate and otherwise quarterbacks that weren't going to pan out, that suddenly when they knew and the rest of the league knew they had one, they weren't willing to let go of him easily.
I'll tell you why they didn't want to make the phone call. They were scared of getting D-hopped.
Well, that's
they were
thing,
so embarrassed by that D-hop deal that they were afraid to make moves at the deadline last year, even if it was a no-brainer. They were terrified because of how much abuse they took for that hideous DeAndre Hopkins.
But that goes back to what I've said
trade.
All along. Everything that the media and the fans scrutinize them for drives them on a daily basis and scares the crap out of them. They are so worried about public perception and imaging that's why the Watt thing. That's why they didn't get a draft pick for J.J. Watt. That's why they let him walk.
Even though J.J. had basically said, look, trade me.
Right. But they basically went to him and said, hey, look, if you say this wasn't us, this is you wanting out, we'll let you go wherever you want to go, as opposed to getting a third-round pick for him, sending him somewhere. As you said, the D-hop deal. The thing that's mesmerizing to me is one coach who anointed himself the general manager had so much control without winning that he was able to skip this by a clueless ownership group, starting with Cal, and trade the best receiver in football for pennies on the dollar and washed up running backs and other things that no one in their right mind as another general manager in this league would have made the move to do. And so that's a problem. That's another big problem. But it also comes down to, and I ask you this question and we can get to it on the other side of the break, but with all the things we said about Deshaun, if he's involved in the process of hiring the next coach and the next general manager and the interviews, does he ever say he wants out? Does he ever, or does he change course and say, I'm good?
We'll get into that on the other side. That's more than a 30-second answer. We'll get into that coming up next. This is the Killer Bees.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Pat Straten in for Jeremy Branham, alongside Joel Blank, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5. Joel, you had asked me about, would Deshaun Watson's position be different if the owner had allowed him to have a seat at the table for the GM head coach search, which by all intents and for all intents and purposes was offered to him, but then never actually came true. And
it was a hot button. We know that
big time. It was a big issue for Deshaun. He felt betrayed. He felt lied to. Clearly, other people in the organization felt the same way, because once Jack Easterby got Cal to take the private jet to go see Nick Caserio and hire him on a blink, well, Jamie Roots, who's been there for over 20 years, peaced out. And Jamie was Bob McNair's right hand for over 20 years. For him to just peace out, clearly, there was a lot of reason for that. And while Jamie will never say it, because that's not the kind of guy Jamie is, Jamie is a class act. Jamie is never going to throw the Texans under the bus. You don't have to read this real deep to figure out, despite over 20 years as being the right hand of that family, he was excluded, as was the search firm and everybody else involved in that. He was excluded from the decision that was basically made on a whim over a weekend. And if Deshaun had gotten the seat at the table, I do think things would have been a lot different. And this is where I drew the example, because if you remember from the Texans-Jaguars game, they mentioned this during the broadcast, that Shad Khan had told Trevor Lawrence he was going to get a seat at the table when it came to picking the new head coach. Now, Trevor Lawrence is a rookie.
Yep.
He hasn't done anything in the NFL yet, and he's going to get a seat at the table. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to get final say.
Right.
But it means he's going to have an input. How much different is the relationship between Deshaun and Cal if Deshaun just had a seat at the table? Maybe he didn't have final say, and I don't think he was ever going to. And I don't think he expected to have final say. I think he expected to have an input and be part of the discussion. And because that never happened, and he was promised it would happen, well, he lost his plea. If he had the conversation, if he was at the table and got to say his piece, I think it's very different for him and the Houston Texans. And they probably don't take, maybe they take Davis Mills, because by the time the draft rolled around, well, we learned more things about Deshaun Watson. But at that point in time, you go back to January, before we knew about all that stuff, if they had just let him have a say, even if he didn't have the final say, if he just had a say, I think he and his agent have a very different relationship with Cal McNair, and maybe they were able to mend enough fence to have a working relationship with Jack Easterby, who, while last year was, you know, very heavily reported to be a divisive figure in the locker room, this year, not one single peep out of Jack Easterby or any town or any source saying Easterby has been a negative influence. And I can tell you, at training camp this year, Easterby was very prominent. He was out on the field, usually shouting encouragement at players, good job, nice play, you know, all positive things, nothing that you would say, oh, look at this idiot. He was a positive influence. He offered the media water. He did stuff like that.
So he's a cheerleader and a water boy.
That's essentially what he was. And every time we see video in the Texans locker room like they had after the Titans game, well, there's Jack Easterby. Now, he's not talking. He was clapping, cheering.
The first one, he was shoving Caserio into the picture to try and get him a part of the game ball presentation when Caserio wanted no part of it.
But he has not been, by any representation, a negative influence on the team this season. And I think that matters because if we peel the onion back a little bit and say, well, Deshaun and Cal and Jack kind of mend some fences because he had a seat at the table, and now Jack is able to have a better relationship with the team. Well, you add those two things together, and the Texans are in a very different spot than they would be right
now. And that was my point. But from the Easterby perspective, I think there's just too much damage done, too much of a track record that you can't escape from out from under unless he's somewhere else, that people won't forget about, both agents, players, and even the fan base, let alone the media. So no matter what he's doing now, what he did then was still such a negative that I don't think anybody can look past it. And because he was directly associated with every bad move that Bill O'Brien made by Bill O'Brien, whether he liked it or not, and whether he was the guy that actually stabbed Bill in the back and got him fired or not at the end of the day so that he could save his own ass, it doesn't matter because there's a negative connotation with everything he does as a member of the Houston Texans franchise, and that's not going away no matter how much he tries to sing Kumbaya, pass out water, and yell encouragement. I think from the standpoint, from the Deshaun perspective, from my own personal experiences that I brought up, you're a stupid organization if you don't include a seat at the table for your best players when you're making big decisions. I experienced it firsthand, and now granted, the rosters are smaller in the NBA than they are in the NFL. But Akeem, Clyde, Charles, or even before Clyde got here, they were consulted before moves were made. It could be a rotational player. It could have been when they were trading for Drexler. But I was privy to some of them, and I knew most of them happened because Rudy and Carroll Dawson knew, I'm not going to go out and get a guy that I think might make my team better, but if my best players don't get on board with it and aren't in favor of it or have a bad relationship with him, it may actually implode on me because of the move that I make, and I won't make that move. And like you said, the one thing that I've always harped on is it doesn't mean you go with what they say and what they want, but you have at least appeased them by keeping them abreast of the situation, getting their opinions, letting them partake in the process, give their feedback, and at the end of the day, let them know throughout the process as well, hey, I want you a part of the process, but at the end of the day, it's my ass that's on the line with the decision that we make. So we may not make the decision you want us to make, but we want you a part of the process, and we want to hear what you have to say.
Here is where I'll disagree with you on the Easterby stuff to a degree, because, you know, not a huge Easterby fan, not by any stretch of the imagination, but because of the way the NFL is set up, you've got so many guys on the roster, so many of the contracts are not guaranteed. You can turn the roster over so fast. So much of this roster is already turned over just from last year that the overwhelming majority of whatever negativity was born from a year ago, almost every one of those guys have moved on. There are very few players who are still here from a year ago. And by next year, there might be two. Mm-hmm. The number of guys who are going to carry over that negativity, well, they've essentially cleansed the locker room of all of that. And while that doesn't necessarily mean like, oh, well, it won't happen again or whatnot, but the NFL has shown, no matter how bad a team is, if you offer money, we'll take it. There's only so many jobs, and I'd rather have a spot on a bad team than being on a practice squad or on the street. Hopefully I can get traded and go somewhere else. Guys will continue to sign with the Texans because, well, they want that next check. And much like this year, you know, what, 37 guys who were thrown to the scrap heap by other teams wound up here. All those one-year contracts are going to get replaced by other one-year contracts next year. And the more guys like Amanahu and Justin Reed, and if ultimately Tunsil and Cook, like the more guys that just keep moving on out of here as they bring in younger talent, the number of guys who were here for whatever negativity Jack may have had his first year, who dealt with whatever with Bill O'Brien, those guys are gone. The new group, it may as well have never happened to them. We see how young guys are. If it didn't happen to them in the last 12 months, they never heard of it. So maybe I think that's something that as fans and as media, we hold on to that because we're with the team every year. The players aren't. And that moves out faster for them than it does for us. We'll get more into that coming up on the other side. This is the Killer Bees, Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Branham. He's Joel Blank, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, so Joel, on Christmas, two more bowl games bit the dust.
Really?
And another bowl game, Miami, out of the Sun Bowl.
Oh, darn.
Because they all got the Rona. Yeah. Are we getting a little closer to college football playoff Armageddon? They came up with the ingenious idea. Well, if a team can't play because of the Rona, well, they'll just forfeit. And if we have to get to the title game, the college football national championship game, and one team has the Rona, well, we're not going to reschedule. We're just going to declare the other team the winner because they really need to find new ways to make us hate them. Georgia is talking about, hey, you know, we're down here in Miami, which is a COVID hotspot, trying to do everything we can not to get the Rona.
They're bubbling?
Well, they are they are in, you know, look, for all the talk about, you know, what states do what, and I don't want to get into, you know, what governor thinks about what. The bottom line is Miami's a COVID hotspot, a big COVID hotspot. And, you know, while Louis Cine is a defensive back for Georgia, he said he thinks 98 to 99% of the team is vaccinated. They're wearing masks indoors. They're trying not to come into contact with anybody, anywhere. They're basically not going out. They're staying in the hotel. All the fun that you would think guys would go out and have in Miami, well, they're not going out and having fun on Miami, although they did, as a team, have a team event dinner on a boat. But again, that's all them. It's not like they're having dinner on a boat with, you know, 900 of their best friends and neighbors mm-hmm. that they've never met. If we get to a situation where there's an outbreak of COVID in the CFP, if they forfeit the game, not even postpone, they're just going to forfeit the game, I think I'm out.
This is my biggest frustration because it goes across the board with the NCAA. U of H was supposed to open up conference play this week and play one of their big rivals in Cincinnati in basketball. The game wasn't postponed. It was canceled and forfeited.
Well, Kelvin Sampson spoke a little bit earlier and said that they are going to reschedule those games.
Which it should be, because my biggest pain in all of this is just the term canceled or forfeited. And when it comes to, look, the bowl games, I could care less about, you know, there's way too many bowl games, as we've said, it's oversaturated. The best way to do bowl games going forward, once they really get the college football playoff figured out, which hopefully will be sooner rather than later, is to make sure that every bowl game has implications towards getting you to a national champion, and it has basically playoff game implications, and they are playoff games that are bowl games. Because otherwise, I don't care about the Mayo Bowl and all the other bowls that are being forfeited, or the Yankee Stadium Bowl, or all the other dumb bowls that go there just so that schools can try and collect some extra money. But the fact that you're going to take the potential and make it public, the two biggest games in college football leading up to your national championship game, and going, hey, by the way, there's a chance that if the Rona goes crazy, you forfeit. I think that's BS. I think that's, I'm with you in the fact that I would have to consider being out on it too. Like, what the, like, it's not their fault, but at the same time, what we've realized of all of this, and I'm not getting in on the political side of it. I don't care what side you're on, and I don't care if you're vaccinated or not. That's your own personal choice. But what I do care about is what we really don't, the biggest thing that we know about all of this with Corona is that we don't know. Every case is different. Every variant and strand changes the ball game a little bit. But what I do know is that these guys busted their ass all year long and got through a full season and warranted being where they are right now. And you're going to tell me, without possibly ever playing another down to try and determine their future and chasing a national championship, they could be ruled out and they could be completely eliminated is ridiculous.
And this goes back to, look, all of these policies that were created were all created before there was a known Omicron variant that is now ripping through the country. And if you've gotten, even if you've gotten the vaccine, but if you haven't gotten the booster, even if you've gotten the vaccine, it's still able to get through because they made a vaccine before this variant existed. Now you've got to be able to go back and adapt and say, okay, the world has changed. Mm-hmm. We need to change with it. One of the things that came out with the NFL, if the NFL makes, what, $17, $18 billion a year, and they have access to some of the greatest, you know, medical minds in the world, is the NFL's been collecting data on this over and over again. And what they found is that the Omicron variant, while it is more infectious than the others, the symptoms are much less. Mm-hmm. The number of people going to the hospital way down. The number of people who are seriously ill and possibly terminally ill way down percentage-wise compared to the primary two previous iterants of the virus. What they have also found is there's a number that they can determine that when they test you, if you score 35 or higher on this number, that even if you're positive, you're not transmitting. They found that people who are positive and asymptomatic are not transmitting the virus. All their data says the transmissions have come outside of team facilities, not inside team facilities. So the NFL, because of its commitment to trying to figure out how to overcome the virus, actually gives us a lot of information. And that is, well, you can be positive for coronavirus, asymptomatic, and if you're asymptomatic, you're not transmitting it to anybody else. So why have the other sports not caught up on this? If I'm another sport, I'm going to the NFL. I'm asking for their info. I'm comparing it to my own. I want to see, hey, they're coming up with this info that says all these people might be positive, but they're not transmitting. Well, then they can play. There's no risk to other players on the field. Do we have the same information? Can we confirm their information? Because the NHL was on shutdown. The NBA has had to postpone games.
NBA is getting worse.
And they're packing on more and more guys. Over 320 guys have been put on the COVID list in the NFL in the last 10 days. If they're able to figure all this stuff out, because, wow, do they make money, why everybody should be, like, it's almost like they should be working together and sharing the
data and information, right?
Because if the NFL could turn around and say, all these guys, they're not sick, well, they're not getting anybody else sick. Hey, NCAA, all these guys were testing positive, but they have no symptoms. Let them play. Don't put them on the list. Let them play. In fact, if they're not showing any symptoms, you don't even need to test them. Because only if they show symptoms are they getting anyone else sick. That's where I think we all need to be for right now. And only because they've done the research.
But you hit on it, though, Pat. It's all for selfish reasons that they're going to make their own individual decisions as opposed to sharing data and information and making the best overall decision for everybody involved. The money is too great. The opportunities are sitting there on a tightrope because of the fact that they've already experienced what it's like to play in venues without fans, to be bubbled up for weeks on end, to do all the things that they felt necessary just to make sure they completed seasons and playoffs and still, again, at the end of the day, got the dollars at least to some degree from the sponsors and the other elements that are the most important to them. And the NCAA is basically telling you, too, that they're more concerned about the cash than the actual research and investigation into making this something that they can manage. They're not doing it the right way, but when has the NCAA ever done anything the right way?
But this is why it's so strange to me, is because, you know, you think about how much money they did not make last year because they played in empty stadiums. Mm-hmm. Now, they still got all the TV money, and they still got the sponsor money, but they didn't get all the ticket sales and all the concessions and all the merchandising and the parking and the millions and millions of dollars that comes in with that. Now,
so
you're
why
talking
would you forfeit?
About well, you'll just not play the game.
See, and that's
the network's going to lose their mind because, well, now I don't have any program to fix that. But I've paid you tens of millions of dollars for this game.
That was the point I was making in making that point, in the fact that NCAA has no consistency. And I talked about past precedents when I talked about the NFL and Major League Baseball, in the fact that they don't follow it, they don't use it as protocol to try and make the right decision and the right punishments. It, from the standpoint of the NCAA, the fact of the matter is, even if that was an internal discussion that was being had amongst the four teams and NCAA management, you don't make that public. You don't come out and say those kind of things. And you basically are in a brainstorming session right now because no one knows, right? So you're throwing out possible scenarios and ways that they are going to try and combat that from happening and or deal with it if it does happen. The last thing you need to do is make that public. And the last thing you need to do is make that to be your final decision. But instead, they throw it out there to the media and otherwise, and just without realizing the backlash they're going to get, how ludicrous it would be to make that kind of decision, and all the different factors that are going to completely go against that kind of a decision being made, but yet they made that public.
There's so many things that don't make sense, but you can't have a real national champion if you don't actually play the game. And, all right, so the game is scheduled for, what, the 10th? You're telling me you couldn't play it on the 12th? You couldn't play it on the 14th?
But going back to that, too, of determining a national champion without playing the game, it really worked well because they first thought computers could do it back in the day. That didn't work out so well.
Then
they thought a committee could do it. How'd that work out in terms of the backlash that they got there for the fact that even head-to-head matchups didn't seem to matter at the end of the day when it came down to determining who was the better team? But yet they feel like they can give a national championship away if they don't play the games? Get out of here, man. Come on.
The NCAA and the college football playoff, they want to find more reasons. They want to invent reasons for us to hate them. All right, David Culley rumored to be on the hot seat. Maybe less so if they continue to win. But head coaching interviews start soon, and there could be a lot of teams that have vacancies. Do any of these potential assistant coaches who are likely to get phone calls, do any of these guys move the needle for you? Next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's try M-E-O-W. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.